We'll move to questions without notice. Are there any questions? And I give the call to the Honourable the Leader of the Opposition.
Thank you very much, Mr Speaker. My question is to the Minister for Immigration. On 16th of November in this place, the Minister committed to the House that his department would make contact with all who had been victims of the criminals released from immigration detention by the government. Has the government now contacted all of the victims of the crimes committed by the 149 criminals it released from immigration detention?
The call to the Minister for Immigration, Citizenship and Multicultural Affairs.
Thank you, Speaker, and I thank the Leader of the Opposition for his question, and I can assure him that my thoughts, and I'm sure the thoughts of all members of this House, are with those affected by the crimes of those who were detained and who were required to be released by reason of the order of the court. In the time following the High Court's decision, the Department put in place a mechanism that would enable victims to be contacted. Obviously, there are some issues around personal privacy and other questions that need to be addressed in that, but it was very important we put in place such a mechanism.
Call to the Honourable Member. Order. The Honourable Member for Bootby.
Thank you, Mr Speaker. My question is to the Prime Minister. How will the Albanese Labor government's tax cuts help Australians with the cost of living? What has been the response to Labor's plans?
The call to the Prime Minister.
I thank the member for Boothby for her question. And of course, she supports every Australian taxpayer getting a tax cut. Yeah. All 13.6 million of them, not just some. Because the member for Boothby understands, due to her background as well in the social services sector, where she had a career helping people through organisations like St Vincent de Paul, that we can't leave people behind. And that's why every single worker, whether they earn $45,000 or not, will get a tax cut as a result. Everyone below $45,000 will benefit from the reduction in that first rate from 19 down to 16 cents. And the good news is that that tax cut flows right through the income tax scales. But we haven't left it there, Mr Speaker, because we also don't want to leave people behind. We want to support average workers. We want to support aspirations. And that's why we've lifted the rate from $120,000 up to $135,000, where the 37 rate kicks in. And that's why we've lifted the top rate from $180,000 to $190,000 as well. And I note it's the first increase in the top rate since 2008. 2008, when we occupied the Treasury benches then as well.
Order.
It stands in stark contrast to what occurred from those opposite, who actually put in an increase in the top rate by introducing, without any notice prior to an election,
order,
a so-called deficit levy on higher income earners. At the same time, as the Leader of the Opposition personally tried to put in a GP tax on every visit to the GP, and a tax on everyone who visited a hospital, and an increase in the cost of medicines as well, at the same time as ripping $50 billion out of the health system. But what we will do, a shop assistant on $32,000 will get a $414 tax cut instead of nothing. A nurse on $76,000 will get $1,579. A teacher on $80,000 will get $1,679. A police officer on $110,000 will get $2,429. And an IT manager on $160,000 will get $3,729. These tax cuts will make an enormous difference. And importantly as well, they won't put pressure on inflation. We want people to earn more and to keep more of what they earn. What they want is for people to work longer for less. That's the great divide in Australian politics today. This side of the House that understand the aspiration is what every Australian family has for themselves and for their kids.
Time has concluded. Give the call to the Honourable Member for Wannon.
My question is to the Minister for Immigration. The Minister advised the House in relation to the 149 criminals released from immigration detention that, and I quote, each one of them is being continuously monitored, end quote. But we know that at least 18 criminals have been arrested by state and territory police after committing crimes. How can the Minister claim they are being continuously monitored if in fact they've been left to their own devices to commit crimes?
Order. The Minister for Social Services will cease interjecting. Order. The Member for Barker will cease interjecting as well. So I can hear from the Minister for Immigration, Citizenship and Multicultural Affairs.
Thank you, Speaker, and I thank the Shadow Minister for his question. I acknowledge the impact of the recent bushfires on the community he represents as well. Now, as I've advised the House previously, because of the four layers of protection we've put in place, in particular strict visa conditions, including reporting requirements, and in the case of many, electronic monitoring, the location of every individual in this cohort is known. Every individual's location is known. And unlike those opposite, I want to reassure Australians and remind them of what the AFP Acting Deputy Commissioner said last night to Senate Estimates. He said, and I quote, "I don't think there's any difficulty in knowing where they are. They're monitored through the mechanism of those clauses which are placed upon them, which are quite restrictive." On this side of the House, we trust our law enforcement and thank them for their work in keeping Australians safe.
As the Minister concluded his answer, give a call to the Honourable Member for Aston.
My question is to the Treasurer. How will the Albanese Labor Government's tax cuts ease pressure on Australians, including young people and working families, and what obstacles were overcome?
Give the call to the Treasurer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Thank you to the Member for Aston. The Member for Aston's only been here for a relatively short period of time, Mr. Speaker, and already the Member for Aston has helped ensure that every Australian taxpayer gets a tax cut. And 87% of her community will get a bigger tax cut as a consequence of this important change, Mr. Speaker. Everyone gets a tax cut under the changes which are before the parliament. But what we are putting forward is a bigger tax cut for more people to help with cost of living pressures. And our tax changes are better for middle Australia. They're better for women and better for the economy. They're also better for young people, better for working families, and much, much better when it comes to the industries where we need more workers to power up the future, Mr. Speaker. Now, in percentage terms, the biggest generational beneficiaries are Gen Z, younger people. 96% of younger people, even better off. The biggest beneficiaries in dollar terms are millennials, 40% of the total in dollar terms for people who are more likely to have young kids and young families. In the care economy, 97% of workers will get a bigger tax cut, and we need more workers in the care economy. In blue-collar industries like manufacturing and in the services sector, more than 9 in every 10 workers will get a bigger tax cut. Now, Mr. Speaker, after between today's question time and tomorrow's question time, the House will get the opportunity to vote on our cost of living tax cuts. And after all of their huffing and puffing and red-faced incoherence and breathless incompetence, all of their nasty negativity, after calling for an election on this issue, after the Shadow Treasurer equated bigger tax cuts for more people with Marxism, they now say that they are voting for our changes. What a humiliating capitulation, Mr. Speaker. And when the time comes, this side of the House will vote for our tax changes enthusiastically, Mr. Speaker. Those opposite will vote for them reluctantly, and that's because we know what they really think about these tax cuts, and that's because the Deputy Leader was asked, will they roll them back in if they win the election, and she said that's absolutely their position. They have abandoned middle Australia in opposition, just like they abandoned them in government. The opposition leader wanted to boycott 200,000 Woolies workers. We all remember that. And then they tried to abandon 11.5 million workers who will get a bigger tax cut. They don't even pretend to care about the cost of living anymore, Mr. Speaker. If they cared, they'd ask questions about it and they'd vote for it enthusiastically. For the best part of a decade, Mr. Speaker, middle Australia didn't get a look in. And that changed under this Prime Minister and this government, Mr. Speaker, and it revealed the defining difference between this side and that side. We want more Australians earning more and keeping more of what they earn. They want people earning less and working longer for less.
Order. Order. We'll hear from the member for Clark.
Speaker, my question is to the minister representing the Minister for Agriculture, and it's very specific. Minister, by what date will the export of live sheep to the Middle East be banned, and by what date will the ban be legislated?
Give a call to the minister representing the Minister for Agriculture, Fisheries and Forestry.
Can I thank the member for Clark very much for the question? I know this is a topic he feels very passionately about, as does a number of his constituents, and you know, as do many across our communities. Many of us represent areas where farmers are getting an income from live sheep export. Many of us also represent communities that feel very strongly about it being phased out. Of course, this government supports strong animal welfare standards, and we do believe that animals must and should be treated humanely. We need to partner with the industry to shape a strong and sustainable future for the Australian sheep wool and sheep meat industry. People earn their livelihoods from this sector, but we also know that we are implementing our commitment to phase out live sheep export in a considered and an orderly way. That work is important. It's why the phase out of live sheep export by sea will not occur during this term of parliament. An independent panel who was appointed to consult with farming and communities to inform when and how to implement this policy and how to ensure that that industry, you know, that they continue to derive income from farming in their communities. That panel has completed its work and its consultation. It's provided that report to government. The government is considering that report. We are taking our time to properly assess all of the recommendations and the impact. I'm answering the question pretty directly.
Order. The minister will pause, and I'll listen to the member for Clark on a point of order.
Speaker, on relevance, the question could not be more specific. Exactly what date will it be phased out and legislated?
As the member knows, and we've dealt with this issue, the minister has been talking about a range of timelines. You may want a specific date or answer, but under the standing order, she's not provided to necessarily do that. She is giving context and information about the timelines, so she is being directly relevant.
As I said, the government is taking the time to properly assess all of the recommendations in the report and to develop a response that honours the commitment that we have to phase out live sheep export, but also that understands that there are livelihoods involved in this process. I know that, having farmers in my own community whose livelihood not depends on this, but it is part of it. They are seeing, you know, great work being done in terms of renewables and getting incomes from having solar farms and wind farms on their electorates, but they are really important issues. The report, of course, they'll then be made.
Order. Members on my left.
I note the interjections opposite, as are many farmers in your electorates as well.
Leader of the Nationals and Deputy of the Opposition will cease interjecting.
Nothing gets them going like renewables, Mr Speaker. Nothing gets them going. That report, of course, will then be made public. We are committed to delivering a considered and orderly transition that does maximise the onshore job opportunities, particularly in Western Australia, in our on sheep meat exports.
The Leader of the Nationals will cease interjecting. The House comes to order. I'll hear from the member for Hasluck.
Thank you, Speaker. My question is to the Deputy Prime Minister. How is the Albanese Labor government providing cost of living relief to Australian Defence Force members and public servants in the Department of Defence? And how is the government's approach to decision making different?
Give a call to the minute. Order. The member for Herbert is warned. The Minister for Defence and Deputy Prime Minister has the call.
Thank you, Mr Speaker, and can I thank the member for her question, acknowledge her service. There are real challenges around recruitment and retention in the Defence Force, which is why this government has been particularly focused on improving the defence offering. We have introduced $50,000 retention bonuses. We've overseen the biggest wage increase for the Defence Force in more than a decade, and all of this is now being coordinated at a three-star level by Lieutenant General Natasha Fox, the new Chief
of personnel. But one of the most important steps that we can take is delivering a tax cut to every member of the Australian Defence Force, which is what we are doing. Indeed, the average tax cut across the ADF is more than $2,300. And when you add that to the wage increase for the average member of the ADF, they are more than $5,000 better off. This is real and practical action, which is making a difference. The separation rate is starting to fall, and while it's early days, we are beginning to see recruitment numbers turn around. Now, Mr. Speaker, this action stands in stark contrast to the vaudeville show which was put on display by those opposite over more than a decade. In their final years, the ADF was losing members when the Leader of the Opposition was the Minister for Defence, and his solution was hoopla, was to put on a show, a big announcement about increasing the Defence Force by 18,500 people, a commitment which was hopelessly underfunded, total fantasy, make-believe money, because they were always about the politics. They were never about the policy. They talked a big game about being the party of defence, but their real interest in defence was raising political funds for their party. And recently, we've seen them wandering around saying if they were ever asked, they would send ships to the Red Sea. But what has now been revealed is that when they were asked, they said no. And the defence of the Leader of the Opposition when he was the minister is that he didn't even know a request had been made, which is absolutely astonishing. But then again, he was always the Minister for Defence Politics, so we probably shouldn't be surprised that defence policy never made it onto his radar. The government, which is delivering real tax benefits, which has delivered a budget surplus, which is keeping our nation safe, is the Albanese Labor government.
Yeah. Call to the Deputy Leader of the Opposition.
My question is to the Minister for Immigration. The Minister advised the House in relation to the 149 criminals released from immigration detention that each one of them is being continuously monitored. But we now know that the Minister has exempted 36 of them from continuous ankle monitoring. On what basis did the Minister claim they are being continuously monitored? Why did the Minister mislead the House?
Order. Yeah. We'll hear from the Leader of the House.
Speaker, the last part of that question should be withdrawn. That's an allegation that can only be made by substantive motion.
If the we're going to rule that part out. If the Shadow Minister or Deputy believes that's the case, she could state the question. Has the Minister not just simply state the question? So give the call to the Minister for Immigration, Multicultural Affairs and Citizenship.
Thank you very much, and I thank the Deputy Leader of the Opposition for her question. As I just said to the question asked by the member for Wannon, because of the entirety of the four layers of protection, at least one of which applying to every member of the cohort, strict visa conditions, which include, of course, reporting requirements, as he would be well aware, as well as electronic monitoring for the majority, and curfews for many, the location of every individual in this cohort is known.
Give the call to the member for Bendigo. Yeah.
Thank you, Speaker. My question is to the Minister for Health. How will nurses and other health professionals benefit from Labor's cost of living tax cuts? How do the tax cuts build on the investment the government is making to strengthen Medicare? And why are these investments so important after a decade of cuts and neglect?
Call to the order. Members on my right and left will cease objecting. Give the call to the Minister for Health and Aged Care.
Thank you, Speaker. And I thank the member for Bendigo for her question, because there are 66,000 taxpayers in her electorate who on July 1 will receive a tax cut to help with the cost of living. Every single one of them, not some, every single one of them. And many of those taxpayers, Mr. Speaker, are working in health, including at the Bendigo and the St John of God hospitals in the members' electorate. And on July 1, a third-year registered nurse at the Bendigo Hospital will receive a tax cut of more than $1,550, which is more than double what they would have received under the plan from those opposite. A trainee enrolled nurse will receive a tax cut of $937 compared to just $133, which is what they would have received under those opposite. Helping hard-working health and hospital workers not only earn more but keep more of what they earn, Mr Speaker. And Mr Speaker, these bigger, better tax cuts for middle Australia build on a range of other measures we've been putting in place to help with the cost of living, like more support for bulk billing. When we came to government, Mr Speaker, bulk billing, particularly for GP visits, was in free fall. And that slide traces directly back to the Leader of the Opposition's time as the Health Minister. Now, his first budget glossy as Health Minister a decade ago said this, Mr Speaker. It said, from July 1, previously bulk billed patients can expect to contribute towards the cost of standard GP consultations and out-of-hospital pathology and imaging services, Mr Speaker. That was his plan, to abolish bulk billing altogether. And when he couldn't get through the Senate, instead he kicked off a years-long freeze to the Medicare rebate that literally ripped billions and billions of dollars out of general practice. Well, that's not our plan, Mr Speaker, because for Labor, bulk billing is the beating heart of Medicare. And that's why in the budget last year we tripled the incentive for bulk billing, something the GPs College described as a game changer, Mr Speaker. And in the first 2 months of operation of those new arrangements, Australians have seen more than 360,000 additional free visits to the GP. And no member of this House has promoted those investments more strongly than the member for Bendigo, Mr Speaker, advertising it widely, talking to every single general practice in her electorate, Mr Speaker, and her community has reaped the benefits of her hard work, with an 8% increase in bulk billing in just 2 months, 9,000 additional free visits to the general practitioner in just 2 months, saving hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars in gap fees. John Howard called bulk billing an absolute rort, Mr Speaker. The Leader of the Opposition tried to abolish it altogether.
Order.
But for Labor, bulk billing is the beating heart of stronger Medicare.
Has concluded. Give the call to the honourable member for Nicholls.
Thank you, Mr Speaker. My question is to the Minister for Immigration. Is the Minister seriously suggesting that a rapist is continuously monitored because they have periodic reporting requirements?
The question. Yep, I'll allow it. It was just the way it was phrased. I was just wanting to make sure it's relevant to the minister's portfolio. Just give the call to the Minister of Immigration, Citizenship, and Multicultural Affairs.
Thank you very much, Speaker. As I have repeatedly informed the House, because of the four layers of protection that we have put in place, because of the arrangements we stood up, including Operation Aegis, enabling the coordination, of course it is the case that we are able to know the location of every individual in this cohort. And I remind the member, as I said a moment ago, of what the Australian Federal Police Acting Deputy Commissioner said last night. I don't think there is any difficulty knowing where they are. That's the whole cohort. They are monitored through the mechanism of those clauses that are placed upon them, which are quite restrictive. We support the work of our law enforcement agencies, and we also have confidence in the trusted officials of the Community Protection Board who are providing advice to government on this cohort.
The call to the honourable member for Hunter.
Thank you, Mr Speaker. My question is to the Minister for Infrastructure, Transport, Regional Development and Local Government. How is the Albanese Labor government delivering better tax cuts to support those living in my community and all across regional Australia? Why are these tax cuts better for regional Australians than other policies on offer?
The call to the Minister for Infrastructure, Transport, Regional Development and Local Government.
Thank you so much, Mr Speaker. And can I thank the member for Hunter for what is a great question. The Albanese government is, of course, indeed delivering tax cuts to Australians living in our regions, putting more money back into the pockets of regional Australians.
In the member's own electorate, of course, of the Hunter, that means all 73,000 taxpayers in the Hunter will receive a tax cut of an average of $1,560 on the 1st of July. And as of the 1st of July, it will be a good day for taxpayers in the member's electorate, but it will also be a good day for taxpayers across all of our regions. In Whitlam, we've got 73,000 taxpayers are getting a tax cut, including 87% who'll be getting a bigger tax cut. In Lingiari, we've got 43,000 taxpayers are getting a tax cut, and that's including 86% getting a bigger tax cut under the Albanese Labor government's tax cuts. In the great electorate of Eden Monaro, we've got 75,000 taxpayers getting a tax cut, including 85% getting a bigger tax cut. And of course, in Flynn, 66,000 taxpayers all getting a tax cut, what with 82% getting a bigger tax cut. All across regional Australia and indeed across the nation, more money to go back into the pockets of workers under this government. We're delivering these tax cuts for every Australian to help with the cost of living. That relief is exactly what our tax cuts for middle Australia are designed to do without putting pressure, of course, on inflation. Now, you might have thought that better tax cuts for middle Australia, better tax cuts for those who live in the regions would be something where there would be a unity ticket across the parliament. Unfortunately, not everyone shares our view. Of course, on this side of the House, we want to make sure that people earn more and they get to keep more of what they earn. Those opposite, we know, want people to work longer for less. Of course, we've seen the Liberal Party, the Leader of the Opposition, the Nationals have made clear that they really do not want these tax cuts for middle Australia. I've been watching the debate in the parliament and I've been listening closely to speaker after speaker after speaker on the opposition side. And they really, really don't want to support. You can hear that from their speeches and their contributions. The Liberals and Nationals are so addicted to voting against cost of living relief in their own communities. They voted against energy relief for working Australians. They voted against cheaper childcare, voted against cheaper medicines, voted against cheaper healthcare. Of course, voted against any cost of living measure that this government puts in place, and those in regional Australia deserve much better than that.
Give the call to Honourable Member Casey.
Thank you, Speaker. My question is to the Minister for Immigration. The Albanese government has released 149 criminals from immigration detention. Last night at Senate estimates, the AFP was unable to confirm if any of those murderers or rapists the minister has released are among those who have committed new crimes. Minister, have any of the 7 murderers, 37 sex offenders or 72 other violent criminals released committed a new offence?
Give a call to the Minister for Immigration. My apologies. On a point of order, the member for Warringah.
A point of order in relation to Standing Order 100D3 and 4 in relation to inferences and imputations in that question. That the release of these detainees was made as a result of the High Court decision. That's not reflected in the question.
We have dealt with this matter before. It's not my role to give judgment on whether statements are accurate or not. The minister will be able to refer whether the question he believes was accurate or whether he has a view or any minister has a view on the accuracy of the statement made. But whilst I appreciate the member for Warringah's point, this question has been, these sorts of questions have been asked for some time and it was dealt with last year as well. On the point of order, the member for Warringah.
I appreciate that. I just want to clarify then, D3 and 4 specifically refers in standing orders that questions must not contain inferences or imputations. So is it the chair's ruling that there is no inferences or imputations in those questions?
Well, it's a statement by the member asking the question about their interpretation and view. And the minister in his or her response may be able to deal with that inference in the question, and the Minister for each question has been dealing with that, and I'm allowing him to address the question, but I'm simply not in a state to adjudicate on every single statement by every single member, whether I believe it's accurate or not. The person answering the question shall deal with that. On the point of order.
Thank you. But in that case, there is no point on having that section in the standing orders. It is there for a reason. That section, if I could just point out, rules in relation to questions 100D, 3 and 4. I'd invite order. Members to read the standing orders. It is clear that it's intended that inferences and imputations should not be included in questions. It's not a question of ruling whether or not one accepts that they're there. It's clear the standing orders make clear they must not contain. It's not a question of saying whether you feel the chair feels that there is a negative imputation. The standing orders are clear. So it's just raising the question of the standing orders.
I appreciate the member's interest and I appreciate her raising the point of order. The difficulty for me as chair is I would start ruling out nearly every question if that was the case. And we did have a similar issue raised by a question yesterday in the crossbench. And as someone who tries to allow as many questions as possible on behalf of the constituents that they represent, I agree it does place me in a difficult position. But I appreciate the member raising the question. Give the call to the Minister for Immigration, Citizenship and Multicultural Affairs.
Thank you, Speaker. And of course, it was the case that it was the decision of the High Court overturning two decades of precedent that required the release of the detainees, the subject of this, as the member well knows or should well
order.
Know.
Yeah.
Now, of the many aspects of our government's response, always focused on community safety, was putting in place criminal penalties for breaches of the visa conditions we've put in place, the strict visa conditions. Of course, how
Member
these things are dealt with, how these breaches are a matter for the Australian Federal Police, and breaches of other state or territory laws a matter
order.
For the relevant law enforcement authorities, and we have confidence in all of them to do their job.
Give a call to the Honourable Member for Moreton.
Thank you, Speaker. My question is to the Minister for Employment and Workplace Relations. How are the Albanese Labor Government's workplace relations reforms helping Australians earn more and keep more of what they earn, and what has been the response to these reforms?
Give a call to the Minister for Employment, Workplace Relations and Minister for the Arts.
Thanks very much, Mr. Speaker, and I thank the Member for Moreton. There is no doubt that the member for Morden, somewhere who, from the time he's arrived here, wants the workers of Queensland to be earning more and wants the workers of Queensland to be keeping more of what they earn. Comparing that, you talk about workers. Pavlov
members
did a study like this.
On my
you talk
left.
About workers earning more and the reactions immediately.
Order.
The reaction's there straight away. But those opposite, in contrast to the member for Morden, have tried
order.
As hard as they can
order.
To never commit to anything. To never commit to anything. And it took Andrew Clonell on Sky News to finally get the Leader of the Opposition to make a commitment on workplace relations, where he committed straight away to be able to say he wanted people to be able to make sure that they would work longer for less. And that's the one principle that he was willing to defend straight away. Within about an hour, the Shadow Treasurer had said that they would have a targeted package of repeals.
Order, the member for Hume.
Well, if you look at the different measures that have been passed since we came to government, which ones do they intend to target? Will they target minimum standards for gig workers? Will they target minimum standards in road transport? Will they target job security for casuals? Will they target
order.
Wage theft
Members
being a
left.
Crime? Will they target the banning of pay secrecy clauses, or will they target the sunsetting of zombie agreements? Because on those zombie agreements, we've recently had a window into exactly how bad they have been for workers. If you look at some of the franchises in Queensland from Hog's Breath Cafe. Now, until this year, until laws were passed which those opposite opposed, people working for those franchises at Hog's Breath Cafes throughout parts of Queensland were on agreements that dated back to 2005. For context, that means an 18-year-old waiter at Hog's Breath had wages and conditions that were set in an agreement registered before they were born. Under these agreements, there were no penalty rates, no overtime, no leave loading, a lower casual loading.
Order, the member for Lyons.
And it was calculated that they were, on average, $59 a week worse off. Because of the change of government, because of the policies that those opposite have opposed, those workers now are paid that $59 again. They are also covered by an award where they now earn $100 a week more under this government. And thanks to this government, they will now also be eligible for a tax cut of more than $1,050, those same workers. $59 through the IR changes, $100 through our approach to the annual wage review, and then more than $1,000 in tax cuts
the
a year. All policies
time
supported
has
by here that just
concluded.
Make those opposite.
Order. The member for Page will cease objecting, so I can hear from the member for Ryan.
Thank you, Speaker. To the Environment Minister, new Queensland Labor Premier Stephen Miles has just approved two new coal mines in 2 weeks. Coal mines that would produce more greenhouse gas pollution than Australia's entire annual emissions. Right. Minister, will you stop these coal mines?
Hear, hear. The call to the Minister for the Environment and Water. Order.
Well, I want to thank the member for her question and remind her that I can't comment on any individual project. And secondly, that this government has done more to act on climate change during our short time in office than any previous Australian government, including when we were last in government.
Order.
Where the Greens political party teamed up with the Liberals and the Nationals to knock off action on climate change. Now,
the
I'm
leader
hearing
of the Australian Greens. Order. Members on my right, the Minister for Home Affairs and the Leader of the Australian Greens will cease interjecting.
Yeah, the truth
the
hurts,
the Deputy Leader
it?
Of the Opposition will also yeah. join them in not interjecting. The Member for Groome and the Member for MacArthur will cease interjecting, and I give the call to the Minister.
Now, the most important thing we've done, of course, to get Australia on that trajectory to net zero that we are so committed to on this side of the chamber is introduce the safeguard mechanism. And of course, the crossbench and the Greens political party supported the safeguard mechanism when it was introduced. In fact, your environment spokesperson, Senator Hanson-Young, said a hard cap on emissions, meaning real pollution, must actually come down and the coal and gas corporations can't buy their way out of the cap with offsets. This puts a limit on coal and gas expansion in Australia. Pollution will now go down, not up. That's the safeguard mechanism that you negotiated, you voted for, you supported, we support, because it takes Australia on that pathway to net zero. Now, just on the issue of emissions, obviously one of the areas where we're making enormous inroads on this side is in the transformation that will lead Australia to becoming a renewable energy superpower. Again, something that we on this side are absolutely committed to doing. So far, in my time as Environment Minister, I have ticked off more than 42 renewable energy projects, which is the equivalent power to powering 2 million homes in Australia. Now, the Treasurer has asked me how many renewable energy projects in Sydney. I can tell you Australia has one of the greatest penetrations of rooftop solar anywhere in the world. 3.6 million Australian homes, because ordinary Australians have realised that cheaper, cleaner, renewable energy is good for the family budget and good for the environment. And that's why, we've set our target of 82% renewable energy, and we're well on track to meeting that. Can I leave the honourable member with this thought? A decade of fighting about climate change has led nowhere. We're committed to
order.
Action.
The minister's time has concluded. Give the call to the honourable member for Hawke.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is to the Minister for Early Childhood Education. How will the Albanese Labor government's tax cuts help families across Australia, including those that benefit from Labor's cheaper childcare policy? Why are these measures so important?
Give the call to the Minister for Early Childhood Education and the Minister for Youth.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and I thank the member for Hawke for his question, because the member for Hawke understands, just as every member on this side of the House who has stood up to speak about the Albanese government's tax cuts, and just as every member on this side of the House that has asked a question this week about cost of living understands, that cost of living is the number one issue for families across Australia. But of course, Mr. Speaker, we knew that before we came to government. We knew that. And that's why the Prime Minister pledged to take action to relieve cost of living pressures for families in Australia. That's why, in government, we're not just talking about cost of living pressures, we're taking action to deliver cost of living relief. That's why we delivered cheaper childcare for more than 1 million families across Australia, including, I might say, 6,800 families in the member for Hawke's electorate. Now, Mr. Speaker, I'm pleased to report that the ACCC review confirmed that our cheaper childcare reforms reduced out-of-pocket costs for families for centre-based care by an average of 11%. Now, if you take a look at that, for a person on $80,000, according to the ACCC report, a family on $80,000 with a child in care for 3 days a week will have saved $1,351.80 in early childhood learning fees. And we're building on that. We're delivering more cost of living relief through our better tax cuts for every Australian, including families. Because under our plan, someone on $80,000 will get a tax cut of $1,679. Now, that's over $3,000 a year. $3,000 a year of real money back into the pockets of middle Australians in the suburbs, in the bush, in the city, in the regions, for all Australians. And that's on top of other measures: cheaper medicines, fee-free TAFE, energy bill relief, all part of our comprehensive plan to tackle cost of living pressures whilst balancing pressure, downward pressure on inflation. But Mr. Speaker, that's the difference here. That's the difference between a government that is prepared to take action, that has a plan for cost of living relief, a government that wants people to earn more and to keep more of what they earn, as opposed to an opposition that wants to keep people working longer for less.
Time has concluded. Give the call to the Honourable the Leader of the Opposition.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. I seek leave to move the following motion immediately.
Order.
That this House notes that the first duty of a government is to keep Australians safe, and that the Albanese government has failed this duty. B notes the Minister for Immigration's numerous failings in his response to the High Court decision in NZYQ, including
order, the Assistant one, Treasurer.
Failing to keep hardcore criminals locked up. Two, failing to know where released detainees now reside. Three, failing to prevent 18 criminals so far committing further offences, lending them to being
Minister
arrested by state, leading, sorry, them to be arrested by state or territory police. Four, failing to conduct continuous monitoring that would prevent criminals from committing further criminal offences. Five, failing to place any of the released criminals into preventative detention, despite 7 murderers, 37 sex criminals, and 72 violent offenders being at large in the community. And six, failing to provide timely and accurate information to the Australian people about the nature and location of the 149 criminals at large in the community. And C, calls upon the Prime Minister to dismiss this incompetent minister who has proven entirely inadequate to the task of keeping Australians safe.
Is leave granted? Order. Leader of the House.
No, the leave's not granted. We want to talk about cost of living.
The order, the member for Barker. The Leader of the Opposition.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. I move that so much of standing and sessional orders be suspended as would prevent the Leader of the Opposition moving the following motion immediately. That this House A notes that the first duty of a government is to keep Australians order. Safe, and the Albanese government has failed in this duty. B notes the Minister for Immigration's numerous failings in his response to the High Court decision in NZYQ, including 1, failing to keep hardcore criminals locked up, 2, failing to know where released detainee criminals are, failing to prevent 18 criminals so far committing further offences, leading them to be arrested by state and territory police, 4, failing to conduct continuous monitoring that would prevent criminals from committing further criminal offences, 5, failing to place any of the released criminals into preventative detention despite 7 murderers, 37 sex criminals and 72 violent offenders being at large in the community, and 6, failing to provide timely and accurate information to the Australian people about the nature and location of the 149 criminals at large in the community, and C, calls upon the Prime Minister to dismiss this incompetent minister who has proven entirely inadequate to the task of keeping Australians safe. Mr. Speaker, this minister has to go.
Order.
This weak Prime Minister needs to show leadership and get rid of—
Resume your seat. Resume your order. Members on my right, the member for Boothby will cease. The member for MacArthur is warned. This is not a free-for-all. The Leader of the House.
Under Standing Order 47E, I require that the suspension be dealt with by the House following the MPI.
Move to the next question. Give the call to the member for Bean.
Thanks, Speaker. My question is to the Minister for Home Affairs.
Order.
How does the Richardson Review build on previous reviews regarding the administration of the Home Affairs portfolio and Australia's immigration system?
Order. Members on my right will cease interjecting. The member for Bean was heard in silence. The Leader of the Opposition, I'm trying to call the Minister. The Minister for Home Affairs and Cybersecurity has the call.
Thank you, Speaker, and I want to thank the brilliant member for Bean for his very good question. Speaker, the Richardson Review that was released this week is a damning indictment into the failures of the Leader of the Opposition. Now, for most of us in this place, just one report of this kind would be absolutely devastating. A report that shows us that the Leader of the Opposition oversaw hundreds of millions of taxpayer dollars being funnelled into companies which were involved in drug smuggling, in arms trafficking, in money laundering and human trafficking. To have so
order.
Fundamentally failed in your duty to the Australian people, how do you come back from that? But of course, from the Leader of the Opposition, it's not just the Richardson Review. 3 reports now from 3 eminent Australians, Martin Parkinson, Christine Nixon and Dennis Richardson, have found that the Leader of the Opposition's public record is littered with systems that he has wrecked and he has destroyed. Martin Parkinson's review, I have it here, describes the migration system as being fundamentally broken, and he has said that this occurred because of a decade of deliberate neglect by those opposite. The Nixon review found that for all the bluff and bluster—
The Minister will not use props during her answer.
The Nixon review found that for all the bluff and bluster that went into being tough on borders, the Leader of the Opposition catastrophically failed to manage our migration system, leading to career criminals
order.
And people who were known human traffickers coming into the country under the Leader of the Opposition's watch and hurting Australian people. Where is the accountability for this? And then, of course, the Richardson Review, which, as we know, demonstrates that on the watch of the Leader of the Opposition, hundreds of millions of dollars was taken from the constituents of
order.
Every single one of us in this chamber and given to companies that went on to commit horrible crimes. Speaker, what we have before us is hundreds of pages that tell us that all the Leader of the Opposition knows how to do is wreck and divide and destroy. But of course, it's not just his time in Home Affairs, Speaker, not just my portfolio and the messes that I'm cleaning up. Remember that when the Leader of the Opposition was Health Minister, he was voted by doctors as being the worst Health Minister in living memory. And then that was before he tried to cut $50 million, $50 billion out of our hospital network. In defence, for all the explosive rhetoric, what we saw was the Leader of the Opposition presiding over delayed defence projects to the tune of 97 years late. Now, Speaker, what do we hear from the Leader of the Opposition in countering all of these very well substantiated claims about him? We hear absolute crickets. And that's because this is a tough guy who doesn't want to answer the tough questions. Now, Speaker, there is one question that matters more than all. When he cannot run a government department, why does he think he should run our country?
To call to the Honourable Member for McKellar.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is for the Treasurer. Two of our nation's most respected economists, Professors Sims and Garnaut, have today put forward a bold plan they say can lower global carbon emissions by at least 6%, would deliver much cheaper power bills and would supercharge a new green export industry here, which would set up Australia's prosperity in the new global economy for decades. With the worst of the coalition climate wreckers of the Nemesis era all but wiped out, isn't it time a carbon levy was back on the table?
Order. Order. I think we'll just get to the answer. Give the call to the Treasurer.
Thanks, Mr. Speaker. I say to the member for McKellar, unfortunately, there's still a few of them here, and that's because you guys can only knock them off one at a time, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I agree that Professors Sims and Garnaut are very distinguished economists and very distinguished thinkers, and that they are well-motivated and well-informed contributors to this debate as well, I might say, as the member for McKellar herself. And we share the objective of a future increasingly powered by cleaner and cheaper and increasingly more renewable energy into the future, because this side of the House believes in the vast industrial and economic opportunities of the net zero economy. Where we differ from the distinguished thinkers at the press club today is that we are not up for the levy that the Professor Sims and Professor Garnaut proposed at the press club today. And part of the reason for that is because we found a better way, Mr. Speaker, or at least an alternative way, but we feel a better way, to implement what is already a comprehensive and ambitious agenda when it comes to clean energy, when it comes to climate change and when it comes to those industrial opportunities from becoming a renewable energy superpower. And here, Mr. Speaker, I want to pay tribute to the Climate Change and Energy Minister for his work in his portfolio. But I also wanted to say, as the Minister for the Environment implied a moment ago, he works closely with the Prime Minister, with the Environment Minister, with the Industry Minister, with the Resources Minister and others to make sure that we grasp the opportunities of the net zero economy. Now, our plan, Mr. Speaker, includes lifting our country's emission reduction targets from 26% to 43%. We've enshrined those targets and our net zero objective in law, which sends a message to renewable energy investors around the world that Australia has changed and it is open to welcoming more investment in clean energy on our shores, Mr. Speaker. And on top of those targets, we've got the safeguard mechanism. We've given it teeth. We've got the capacity investment scheme. We've got the $20 billion for transmission via rewiring the nation. We've got the $2 billion in hydrogen head start. We've got a whole range and a whole raft of policies, Mr. Speaker, when it comes to climate change and energy. And these policies are already accounted for in the budget. And our policy suite, Mr. Speaker, is already helping to drive down emissions and supporting jobs across the economy, including in the industrial and energy sector. And Minister Bowen's last climate change statement showed that our approach means that we are on track
time
to deliver.
Has concluded.
Thank you.
The member for Fairfax interject 8 times during that answer. He is warned. Give the call to the member for Holt.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is to the Minister for Housing and Homelessness. How will Labor's tax cuts help tradies as they work to deliver the Albanese government's broad and ambitious housing agenda, and why is this so important?
Give the call to the Minister for Housing, the Minister for Homelessness and the Minister for Small Business.
Thanks, Mr. Speaker, and I want to thank the member for Holt for her question. I know that she's very supportive of our ambitious housing agenda, particularly in her electorate, and I look forward to visiting her electorate as we start to get more homes on the ground, Mr. Speaker. We know how vital our tradies are going to be
order.
To building the homes that the country needs, Mr. Speaker. Indeed, they're essential for our government's ambitious housing agenda. That's why Labor is ensuring that all of our tradies are going to get a tax cut, Mr. Speaker. Yeah. Labor's tax cuts will let our hard-working tradies keep more of what they earn. Yeah. Those opposite want people to work for longer for less, Mr. Speaker. But we want tax cuts for our tradies, for our sparkies, for our chippies. And for most tradies, they'll be getting a bigger tax cut under Labor than under the plan of those opposite. Indeed, it's important, particularly for apprentices in the housing sector, Mr. Speaker. We all know we need more tradies to get our houses up. For an apprentice on the average taxable income of $40,000, they'll be getting a tax cut of $654, Mr. Speaker. Under their plan, of course, they'd be getting absolutely zero, nothing, Mr. Speaker. And our tradies, particularly the apprentice tradies, they need this tax cut for their cost of living. We want to support our tradies, Mr. Speaker. That's why we're making sure our tradies are all getting a tax cut. As I said earlier in the week, a sparky on an average taxable income of $101,000 will be getting a tax cut of $2,262. And a plumber on an average taxable income of $79,000 will be getting a tax cut of $1,730, Mr. Speaker. And a carpenter on an average taxable income of $72,000 will be getting a tax cut of $1,563, Mr. Speaker. Our tradies are getting larger tax cuts under Labor's plan because we want to make sure our tradies are there to deliver on our housing agenda. We need our tradies to clean up the mess that we've been left in the housing sector by those opposite. We have serious housing challenges in our country, and those opposite have done nothing about supporting what we're trying to do to address them. We've already supported, Mr. Speaker, 4,937 homes through Housing Australia since we came to office, and we'll have thousands more with applications currently open for the first round of the Housing Australia Future Fund and the National Housing Accord. And of course, we've got 4,000 new social homes coming from the Social Housing Accelerator, Mr. Speaker. We have committed $25 billion in new housing funding since we came to office over the next decade, Mr. Speaker, because we want to turn around this housing challenge. We know those opposite have been all over the place. They know they're not supporting our tradies who need a tax cut. Indeed, the leader, the Deputy Leader of the Opposition over there said that they would roll back Labor's tax cuts. We want to make sure that people get to keep more of what they earn, Mr. Speaker.
Concluded. The call to the honourable order. Give the call to the honourable member for Riverina.
My question is to the Minister for Immigration. The Albanese government has released 149 criminals from immigration detention. The Australian Federal Police, in evidence at Senate estimates last night, revealed a number of these criminals have been arrested multiple times. Minister, why has the government so far failed to apply for even one community safety order to lock these people up? Why is the government instead running a catch and release program?
Give the call to the Minister for Immigration, Citizenship and Multicultural Affairs.
Thank you, Speaker, and I thank the member for Riverina for
the
question.
Member for Baden.
And I take the opportunity to remind him, of course, that it was the decision of the High Court that required the release of the detainees, the subject of his question. And I remind him, as well as following the decisions of the court, our top priority always is keeping the community safe. And I remind him, as a senior member of the former government, that the regime that we've put in place is modelled on the former government's high-risk terror offender scheme. I remind him, as I reminded the House yesterday, that the Shadow Minister for Home Affairs and indeed the member for Wannon have reminded all of us that there is a very high legal threshold to be met for a court to agree to ongoing detention. I remind him too that it took the opposition 3 years after passing their legislation to making their first application before the court. And Speaker, I reassure you and I reassure the House that we are preparing applications and we are making sure, as evidence in Senate estimates made clear, that we are putting in place the resources and the processes to get it right, because it is in no one's interest to have a half-baked application that doesn't succeed. Our focus is on doing the things that keep people safe.
Give the call to the honourable member for Pearce.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is to the Minister for Resources and Minister for Northern Australia. How will the Albanese Labor government's tax cuts deliver a bigger benefit to workers in the resources sector and in Northern Australia?
Give a call to the Minister for Resources and the Minister for Northern Australia.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and thank you to the very hard-working member for Pearce for her question. Mr. Speaker, on the 1st of July, the Albanese government will deliver a tax cut to every single Australian taxpayer and to taxpayers right across the great seat of Pearce. 13.6 million Australians will be better off. Workers in the resources sector and right across the great north of our country will be better off. The average wage of the resources sector across this nation is $144,600. Labor's tax changes will deliver them a tax cut of over $3,700. Now, and we know the extraordinary incomes of those in the C-suites, the resources sector, who also get a tax cut, skews this average. So this means that the absolute majority of resources sector workers will be better off under Labor's tax changes than the proposal of 5 years ago by the former PM, who was, of course, also the resources minister at the time. Now, after a prolonged episode of flip-flopping from those opposite, I am glad the Coalition have agreed to finally support the aspirations of resources workers and mining communities right across the country. It's about time. No, really, I can hear the leader and the former leaders of the National Agrarian Socialists over there having a crack. Well, you know, what have you ever done?
Order.
But, Mr. Speaker, I want to let everyone know and remind them that it takes close to anywhere between 500 and 1,000 workers to keep a coal mine in the Hunter or an iron ore mine in the Pilbara operating. Among the many jobs on these mines, there are geologists, mining engineers, metallurgists, all of which are getting a tax cut.
Order.
And it's especially for younger workers in the sector. Younger workers that are so important to the ongoing strength of this industry. A graduate geophysicist on an average income of $90,000 will get a tax cut of over $1,900. A graduate geologist on an average income of $95,000 will get a tax cut of over $2,000. But there are also cooks, there are kitchen hands, there are cleaners that keep the great wealth-creating industry of this country running. Look, I know none of you have ever run into any of them, but we do. On any given mine in this country, cooks on an average income of $89,000 will get a tax cut of over $1,900. Kitchen hands on an average of income of $80,000 will get a tax cut of over $1,600. And cleaners that keep these mines going and keep workers happy, will on average income of $75,000 will get a tax cut of over $1,500. Under Labor, resources workers earn more and resources workers will keep more of what they earn.
Yeah. Remind the Minister, understanding Order 65A, to address her remarks through the Chair. The member for Bruce will leave the chamber under 94A. Give a call to the honourable member for Mallee.
Thank you, Speaker. My question is to the Minister for Immigration. Is everyone that his department and the AGS has identified as likely meeting the test in the NZYQ on a bridging visa R? or has the minister released any of the NZYQ cohort on other visas since 16th of November 2023?
Call to the Minister for Immigration, Citizenship and Multicultural Affairs.
Thank you very much. We have complied with the orders of the court and complied with the law.
Give a call to the honourable member. Order. Give a call to the honourable member for Swan.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is to the Assistant Treasurer and Minister for Financial Services. What is the Albanese Labor Government doing to protect Australians from the scourge of investment scams? Why is this so important?
Give a call to the Assistant Treasurer.
Thanks, Speaker. Can I thank the amazing member for Swan for this question? And I remember fondly the meeting that we had in her electorate. I think it was Forestville? Forest Field, I apologise. Hundreds of people there, very engaged in the issue. And I've got to say, the interest you've shown in this issue is in complete contrast to those opposite, because it's been over 9 months now since they've had a shadow spokesperson for consumer affairs or financial services. We can only draw the conclusion that the Leader of the Opposition thinks that there's nobody on that side who's good enough to do the job. Deputy Speaker,
order.
If you want to be a party,
Leader of the Nationals.
If you want to be a party that represents and aspires to represent the interests of Middle Australia, you want to ensure that Middle Australians are earning more, keeping more of what they earn and keeping their money safe. And our scams agenda is all about ensuring that we keep Australians' money safe, particularly in the area of investment scams. It was a big job to do. Because of the complete indifference and indolence of the member for Deakin when he had my job, scams were growing at $3 billion a year.
The member they doubled, for Deakin.
And then they doubled again. And they are on course to double another $3 billion a year. I'm pleased to inform members of the House that we have arrested that growth because of the comprehensive policy that we've put in place. It's a team job between myself and the Minister for Communications and the Minister for Home Affairs, working comprehensively across the economy. It's important that we ensure that scammers know that we're taking them on. Phase one already in place, the National Anti-Scam Centre already up and running, ASIC funded to pull down fake investment websites, the work that the member for Minister for Communications is doing, blocking over 1 million SMS scams going through to each month. Sensational work, more work to come. Phase two already underway, and this is about ensuring that new codes of practice are in place to ensure tougher obligations on banks, tougher obligations on telecommunications companies and social media platforms as well. But we also want to ensure that Australians get access to affordable advice and qualified advice and helpful advice, and that's why we're putting in place reforms in the area of financial advice to ensure that Australians can get access to qualified advice instead of having to go to Instagram or TikTok or Facebook, which is what they were doing under those opposite.
Assistant Treasurer will pause. The Deputy Leader of the Opposition on a point of order.
A point of order, Mr. Speaker. It's really good the government is one of the people.
It's really simple. The Deputy Leader of the Opposition does get latitude because of her position, and she knows that. But she's abused that latitude by just getting up and giving a point of order, which I specifically explained to the member for Wannon yesterday, who's been here for 14 years. The member's been here for 23 years. And if it continues, people, I won't take the point of order. You'll be ignored. So that's the last time someone's going to make that point of order. Because if it continues, I won't take them. So the Deputy Leader of the Opposition will leave the chamber under 94A. And the member for McEwen is warned. For 11 seconds, the minister in continuation.
Thanks, Speaker. They're angry because they left us with a mess, and their incompetence has meant that we've got a big job to clean up. We're doing it. teamwork right across the government, as opposed to the nemesis
Order.
That we saw on that side.
The Minister's time has concluded. The Prime Minister has the floor.
Thanks, Mr Speaker. Given there have been no questions again on cost of living from those opposite, I ask that Order. Further questions be placed on the notice paper. Yeah.